There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Monday. Live local talk of the hour. Of course, your big part at 343-0106, our phone number, also the text line. Get through to us there. You can call or you can leave us a text. Place a text, leave a text, do a text. Let's do the active verb, text at 343-0106. And somebody asked me, I never completed the discussion on the neck pillows. Oh, you're talking about this morning? I completed it. The fact was that I saw many grown people yesterday, and actually going out to vacation and coming back yesterday, specifically my latest memories out of the airport there in Dallas, of grown people walking through the airport with their, you know, airplane neck pillows on. Like, listen, it's fine to have the airplane neck pillow. Would like you to rest, be well rested when you get to wherever you are. Then you don't have to lean over on me while you're sleeping in the seat there in the airplane. But this guy stopped and was asking me a question about the concourse thing, and I couldn't talk to this man with a straight face because he's got his neck pillow on his neck, like many other people did in the airport. But he stopped and he's talking to me. And he's a grown man who has a neck pillow around his neck as he's talking to me, and I had trouble. So that was it. I mean, there wasn't much more to that other than the fact that I have trouble holding a conversation without laughing when I see things like that. All right, let's bring on my buddy Ben Raines from AL.com. And I was going to talk about this story from down at Sand Island or Pelican Island, but first, I need commentary on neck pillows. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'm too self-conscious to be seen with a neck pillow in any, you know, in the seat or anywhere. Even at home, I wouldn't ever have a neck pillow.
But, you know, and I understand, listen, people travel a bunch, they want to sleep and do those things, that's fine. I just, when you can't take it off to walk through the airport, you know, when you come out through the jetway and you're strolling through the airport and the neck pillow is still around your neck, are you unaware it's there or you just figure that's the best way to carry it?
How do you fall asleep on an airplane? You're in a room surrounded by 200 people. That is not a place I feel comfortable sleeping.
No, but the noise of whoa, 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 that does it to most people.
Yeah, I'm not in that camp.
All right, so we'll leave neck pillows there. But yeah, so somebody asked if I'd... Yeah, we did. We completed the conversation, unless somebody has more to add on that. I do want to talk about getting home and seeing your story posted up on AL.com of hundreds of baby birds killed by volleyball players on Barrier Island. Now, first of all, as headlines go, that's a heck of a headline. If somebody's seeing that elsewhere has no idea of, you know, the context or going through the story, hundreds of baby birds killed by volleyball players. Maybe the first time that headline has ever been written.
And hopefully the last that'll ever need to be written. It was just one of those, you know, astounding things that you can't believe people did. And you know, to set the scene, we're talking about little Sand Island, which used to be the island connected to the lighthouse. And right now it's about the size of a softball field, baseball field. That's all that's left of it, and it's got a total elevation of maybe a foot and a half above sea level, maybe 2 feet. And so these people would have pulled up in their boat, arrived there, and they would have seen, you know, a couple thousand birds, and mostly these little bitty terns, the least tern. These things are tiny. They weigh, you know, 1 ounce. And they're our smallest seabirds, our smallest terns. They mostly eat little anchovies. And they make their nest just on the sand. They make a tiny little depression in the sand, and they lay their eggs right there in the sand.
And explain to people, too, why it's important, you know, these birds have certain places to nest because of that vulnerability, right? They're looking for an isolated island.
Yeah, they are. And you know, they're looking for a predator-free island, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
They used to use Pelican Island, but now that it welded onto Dauphin Island, they lost that as habitat, because what happens anywhere that there are predators, like foxes or house cats or whatever, as soon as their eggs hatch, that night the predators come, scare the birds off, and eat all the babies. So they have lost all of their traditional nesting spots that they used to use. There are a few over on Raccoon Island, and anyway, mm-hmm. So they want this, you know, bare open area, and that's their whole strategy. They get together in a very dense, they're colony nesters, colonial nesters, which means they all get together, and multiple species will be there. There were black skimmers out there as well, right amongst them. But these birds will lay their eggs about a foot apart from each other. And so it's like a little minefield, and the eggs are tiny. A least tern egg is about the size of a grape. And I don't mean a big grape, but, you know, like just a little grocery store red grape. And so there would have, you know, there were 560 nesting pairs on this island. And these people set the volleyball net up right in the middle of this giant colony, which is the biggest least tern colony that's ever been found in Alabama at this point.
Well, okay, so
and,
you've got...
And they destroyed it.
Well, and that's... And timeline on this is when? When was this? When did it occur?
4th of July weekend is when the volleyball net went up, I believe.
You know, it's... And I am familiar with that island, you know, and I'm familiar with that place, as you are. Spent a lot of time around out there. I'm also familiar with nesting birds not liking your presence, right, when you're out there.
Yeah.
And you know, moving along, wade fishing or doing something like that, and having the squawks and harassment of the birds doing what they're supposed to do, defend the nest. That's
right.
Their job.
And
that's what God,
you know,
made them do. So
keep on moving, and they'll run off the nest for a minute, but they'll come back.
That's right. That's
and
right.
That's what's so important. You know, we're here in July. We're on the same latitude as Cairo. Our sun is brutal, and it will cook those eggs in a matter of minutes. Or the fledglings, the little, you know, baby birds that are covered in the fuzz. They don't even have feathers yet to protect themselves, and they're just really vulnerable. They're also vulnerable to other birds. The black skimmers, we actually saw a black skimmer when another skimmer came off the nest. This rival skimmer swooped in and picked their baby up, mm-hmm. flew about 8 feet in the air, and then hurled it.
Yeah, they're getting rid of competition. I mean, that
right.
There's always. I mean, there's going to be. Lord knows, I'm sure they nest with the idea that, you know, not many of them are going to survive. But when something like you described happens, that's not nature being nature. I'm not one out. I don't want to play referee. Nature's going to be nature until you have something as what I call stupid as you described happening
yeah.
here.
Well, and what's really irritating about the whole thing. About a mile away, and these people had to get to this island in a boat. A mile away, they could have gone to the giant spit that is Pelican Island. You know, the thing is mm-hmm. 2 miles long. It's huge. You could put up dozens of volleyball nets on there and wouldn't have disturbed any birds. I just have a really hard time imagining these people carrying their volleyball net out there. And this volleyball net had metal bases about 2.5 feet across, you know, big, heavy bases. They had to lug all that out there. And then they actually had to clear out the area where their court was going to be picking up all the eggs.
Explain that again to people. That's what I think is lost on some of the people that have shared this story with me. It's not just, you know, they said, well, people are, you know, we're ignorant. They don't know about this. But it wasn't just walking ignorantly and stepping on an egg. They actively removed the eggs so they could play volleyball.
Yep. And they would have had to move chicks as well, because a lot of the nests, you know, at that time had both eggs and chicks. Like one sibling will hatch out a few hours or a day ahead of the other. So they actually picked up all these eggs and put them in a pile. They made a little heap of sand and put them all there next to the volleyball net. You at that point, and these depressions in the sand are very clearly nests. You know, they're no sticks or anything, but they're very small little, like a plate, like a saucer, you know, little depression the birds mm-hmm. sit on top of the eggs in. They would have had to pick them up out of these very obvious nests and heap them up over there. And then while they were playing, all the birds surrounding them would have left the nest.
Mm-hmm.
So all those other eggs would have cooked in the sun. I mean, you know, I don't know if you did it as a kid, but, you know, cooking an egg on the street,
mm-hmm.
you crack it open on the street, well, same, you know, that hot white sand, same concept. And then all the chicks that would have roasted. You know, they would have just been literally baked alive.
You know, here's the thing. We're running the news break here, but the thing that gets me is I find myself in a middle ground, and I can see what's coming. When people do things like this is when government steps in and puts what I feel heavy regulations on people's activities in public lands or keeps them from being in certain places because of people like this, where I would, you know, want to caution people to just act right in the first place, and then you don't have need for the regulations. But we come back more with Ben Raines with AL.com. You didn't play this, did you? With AL.com. Stories up on our Twitter feed. We'll talk more about this when we return right here on Midday Mobile. This is FM Talk 106.5. Really? You're doing this to me?
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 121 FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile on this Monday. Continue our conversation with my buddy Ben Raines with AL.com. Talking about a story that really has got a lot of people talking here. Hundreds of baby birds killed by volleyball players on Barrier Island. Number one, that is the most unique headline probably out there on the web, and number two, it's a sad statement. And I'm a guy that has spent, you know, I'm not looking at it from afar, just like you and I both had our sand toes in that sand many times, fished around that island. I'm familiar with the rookeries that go on. You're saying that this is on the sand island. There's a split between the two parts, and yeah, this year Sand Island is particularly small. There's some years it's bigger. This year is not a big year for it.
Right, and really what it is, it's part of, you know, it's the same bar that is Pelican Island, and it's just, this is where some sand piled up enough to get above the breaking waves.
Now,
and it may not be there next year.
Right, or it may have moved.
Or maybe
right.
Bigger. It could move, it could, you know, be bigger. The one good thing coming out of this is a whole lot of people are realizing, oh, those are birds trying to, you know, make a new generation. Maybe I shouldn't set up my picnic right in the middle of them or whatever.
Right. It is obvious. You described it in the first segment of number one, this colonial rookery, the number of birds, also the depressions are the nest, the eggs, and, you know, I'm looking at a text from Travis here. He says, Sean, as a young boy, I remember very clearly once in Biloxi, my sisters and I accidentally walked into a seabird nesting area. There's no excuse for not knowing those birds because they dive and actually peck at you for trying to get you out of their area as soon as they are. As soon as we got back onto the vegetation, we're fine. You know, he said, I learned that lesson at 10 years old and haven't forgotten it.
Yeah, it's just hard to believe that people chose to ignore that and play volleyball right there and heat those eggs up. It just, you know, I'm a guy, I love to fish. I love people to get to do whatever they want to do. They can go hunting or whatever, but that you would just willfully go destroy, you know, an active bird rookery just blows my mind. I can't believe we're sharing the bay with people that stupid.
Well, and maybe this is the benefit of this, is that we'll talk about it, your story's being read by a lot of people, that maybe if somebody was ignorant to that, that they now aren't. You know, that's because here's what I see coming. And you and I were talking about that spit of land, that bar, privately held land. That is privately owned, even though it's not, you know, people go on it all the time. But other parts aren't. And like Little Dolphin Island, all right, there, you know, alongside Dolphin Island to the north and to the east of the island, Little Dolphin Island, the way the wording of the National Wildlife Refuge is now, you're not supposed to set a foot on it, right? You're not supposed to be on it at all because it's a rookery.
Right.
So I don't want to start limiting access. You know what I'm saying? I would rather people act right and be able to work, you know, let the birds do their thing when they're nesting and then, you know, use it for people at other times instead of having something stupid like this happen to where somebody's going to call for some kind of law.
No, I agree. And there are laws to protect these birds. They were breaking federal law by messing with their eggs, by running them off the nest. They're breaking the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. So these people did commit a crime, you know, which you would think would be enough to deter them, but apparently not.
Probably,
you talk about Little Dolphin Island, its use as a rookery is almost nil now because the foxes are getting out there. Dolphin Island, you know, there used to be a fox on Dolphin Island you could see near the sea lab, and now there are foxes up and down the length of the island. You know, the woods are full of them. So you have this new predator that has emerged on the island. And I think, you know, probably there were foxes 100 years ago, but they were probably hunted heavily. And so their population has just managed to rebound now that the island has become, you know, developed enough that people aren't hunting on it.
Right.
So,
and you could, I mean, there could be, but here's the problem, and you and I know this as being open-eyed, you know, open-eyed guys, that you could say, okay, well, we'll bring in a trapper, and we'll do some trapping of the foxes to reduce their numbers to help the rookery there. And next thing you know, then the Fox Alliance is going to be all over your case, you know? I mean, that's, once you start that, you know.
Well, I've got an idea. And, okay. You know, the end of the island, the end of Dauphin Island is about 11 miles long, totally undeveloped. The birds haven't been able to use it because of this predator issue. But, you know, that's privately owned, but we could build a fence on the west end that went out in the water far enough, a chain link or whatever, to keep the predators on the other side of the fence and give the birds that half. That might be a solution that would actually, we could create one of the biggest nesting habitat areas on the entire Gulf Coast.
That's too cheap and simple to be a program that the government officials get behind. That's
well, exactly. So we just need some school kids and some chain link fence and everybody chipping in pennies. And, you know, we built the turtle fence on the causeway.
Yep.
Most people don't realize it, but there's a 2-foot-high fence that runs the length of the causeway to keep the turtles from crawling up there trying to nest.
I used to tell my children it was to keep toddlers out of the Delta. I think they may still believe me, actually. But yeah, that was a common sense, easy solution. I really like what you're saying. I had not heard that yet, to try to keep the predators off the West End. Let's talk about this, too. In your story, which we've linked through on the Twitter feed, you're talking about the broader scope, too. And in wake of the oil spill, how are the bird populations of our, you know, of our coastal birds? I mean, things like terns or skimmers.
I think the oil spill largely left our birds untouched. You know, we got so little oil on our beaches and things. And we have Gilliard Island, which is an incredible nesting habitat. No predators out there. And there are some terns out there. There are a lot of gulls. Of course, there's about 20,000 pairs of pelicans. And then now, in the last 3 or 4 years, the ibis have really started to really breed on Gilliard Island. At the same time, though, we've lost some of our other island rookeries, the natural ones, like Raccoon Island and Cat Island. And those, they've been overwashed by hurricanes, and they lost the vegetation that the birds use. So, you know, we're losing some over here, we're gaining some over there. The fact is, with sea level rise, all of those islands are going to be too low, you know, more quickly than we want to believe, just because the storms will be that much higher. It's not that the daily tide will be too high, but they'll get wiped out during the middle of their nesting season. So, you know, this whole issue about making the channel deeper and all, they are talking about building another island in the bay, which somebody was trying to get me all worked up about, and I kind of felt like, well, you know, I catch a lot of fish around Gilliard Island, and golly, there's 50,000 pairs of birds out there.
Right.
So
I mean,
maybe another island won't be the worst thing in the world.
Well, okay, you can be realistic, or you can be somebody who says, no, it needs to be exactly like it was, you know, 300 years ago here. You know, it needs to be exactly like when the French sailed in. But let me tell you something, that's not realistic, it's not happening. So in today's world, I agree with you. If we need to, with more spoil, which I have a whole beef with how the spoil is being taken offshore now, but more spoil put on Dauphin Island or put elsewhere to do something like, hey, if Gilliard's the success it is, and I know just by the smell, the birds love Gilliard. If they need to build another one of those to make a mitigation for something else, I'm for it. That seems like a win-win. They got to get rid of the spoil. And if it helps our birds, who's against that?
Well, you know, and that's how Gilliard Island was born. When they were going to make the Theodore Industrial Canal, they needed somewhere to put all the dirt because they dug up a huge amount of dirt. And so this Dr. Gilliard said, why don't we make an island for the birds? And it's been a massive success. It is absolutely one of the premier pelican rookeries on the Gulf Coast. And just, that's a fact. It is. And, you know, these birds are very opportunistic. I don't know if you've ever been to the Piggly Wiggly in Fairhope, but there are about 500 pairs of terns nesting on the roof of the Piggly Wiggly. It is little white pebbles. It's a pebble roof, you know, like you see, a flat roof with pebbles. and they make their depressions up there in the pebbles, and they fly. It's about a mile from there to the bay. They fly down to the bay, catch some anchovies, come back, feed their babies. I've been up there many years taking pictures of them because it's so cool. They're up there amongst the air conditioners and all that. But that tells you how squeezed they are for habitat. The fact that these birds are nesting a mile from the water on the roof of a grocery store. So that's how important this little island, Sand Island community, was. You know, that was basically the only significant natural nest site we had this year for these birds.
Well, it's
now,
a shame.
You mentioned the oil spill. I want to tell you something I learned at the rodeo.
Okay, wait a second. If you're going to drop a big news item on us, can we got to run to the hard break here. Can you hold on?
Okay, I can.
Okay. Because the hard break waits on nobody. So go to the news break, and then we're back. More with Ben Raines. Also, a bunch of texts coming in on this. And we'll get your text read and take your phone calls at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 135 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, Monday style. And as always, I get to talking to Ben Raines. Our conversations go all over the place. Start off with this story I want you all to read and maybe pass along. Maybe the best, you know, the silver lining to what happened to all those nests on Sand Island is the fact that there's going to be more awareness. And, you know, number one, people won't do it. Or if they see somebody doing it, they'll say, hey, y'all get out of there. I mean, you know, y'all stop that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of success in life if people just go, y'all stop that, please. Y'all move along and stop that. I think you could fix a lot of problems with that.
Yeah, you know better, so do better.
That's right. It's almost like we need mom to show up at places and go, y'all know better than that. Y'all don't do that. So maybe that'll happen. You mentioned a piece of information you got at the rodeo, other than the fact that, you know, it was a great time on a very windy weekend.
No, this was really cool. As windy as it was, three times more flounder were landed at this year's rodeo, were weighed in at this year's rodeo than last year's or any of the years since the oil spill.
That is good news.
To me, that says the flounder are back. And I have had no trouble catching flounder this year. In
fact,
the fish I weighed in for the rodeo was a 3-pound flounder.
You're showing off. But we have had an issue.
I'm serious, though. The flounder have been hard to come by the last few years. And, of course, they're a bottom-dwelling fish, you know, which is where all the oil ended up.
Well, and that's the question, right? And I absolutely have that in my brain, that it seems like, a correlation or corollary, but is it spurious? I'm not sure. I talked to Dr. Sean Powers. I did my show down there from the rodeo, the Friday of rodeo. And
Sean
talked,
is who gave me these statistics about the flounder.
Yeah, and he was talking about in the past, we went through the numbers and kind of trends, and not to get too nerdy here on this show, we'll do that on the outdoor show when you come on, but talking about the fewer and fewer male flounders. They could find the ladies, but not the boys, and that was worrisome.
Yeah. Well, he didn't tell me that. I was just buoyed by the number of flounder.
No, it's good, but it's weird that he said during this downtrend in flounder numbers here, which I know kind of lines up, and I want to believe, part of me wants to believe it's absolutely related to the oil spill, but I want to see a little more science before I believe that. I just need backing on that. But he pointed out that, they could find female flounder, but they couldn't find any he's to go with the she's, or not any, but they couldn't find nearly enough.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting, you know, and there are a lot of environmental contaminants that are known to, they're endocrine disruptors. Mm-hmm. They change the sex of creatures. There was a case up in Virginia on the Shenandoah River where there were no male bass because a pharmaceutical company had been dumping into the river, and it had changed the chemistry to where the fish all came out female.
Wow.
So, you know, who knows? I mean, maybe there was some component in the oil that did the same thing. I mean, one thing that happened during the spill, of course, is all the oil got eaten by bacteria. And this is, you know, well known. Well, what happens when bacteria eats oil? It doesn't disappear. It's just sort of transformed. And so all along our beaches and in the bay, and I have photos of this, there was a brown snow that fell on the seafloor And you could see this everywhere along Fort Morgan, Dauphin Island, in the bay. And the way you could tell it wasn't supposed to look like that was because the little worms, you know, the seafloor is full of worms.
Mm-hmm.
The little worms make those little tiny mounds on the bottom, and they have a little hole in them. Well, those were white because they're pumping sand from underneath, but the bottom was brown. And that was all degraded oil that the bacteria had worked over, but it still had a lot of, you know, we sent some to LSU, to the main, to the lab that did all the fingerprinting of the oil, and they could still detect the BP oil in this brown stuff that settled all over the bottom. Now, this isn't something that, you know, you'd touch and get oily, but it did make a slick on top of the water, up and down the length of our beaches. You could see it, you know, but you'd get on a mask and a snorkel and go down there, and the bottom was caked in this residue that was degraded oil. So if we're talking about, you know, messing with bottom-dwelling creatures, there you go.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, you mentioned about the bacteria eating... The you know, originally when the oil spill happened here, a lot of people that weren't from around here were comparing this as almost an analog to Valdez, and you know,
yeah,
the, and it and
not,
it's not
totally
because
similar.
Yeah, because of water temperature and the beach structure and all those kind of things. But
well, and the distance from the well, you know,
yeah.
Valdez, they just poured bright fresh crude oil on the beach. I mean,
right.
It was right there. You know, this the stuff that ended up here had been at sea for 100 miles.
Right, already getting degraded.
Right.
So, in because there's really not a lot to compare this with what happened, but the chances of mitigating or over time getting rid of the continuing, I don't know if something else could happen with this. Does it get better because of the warm environment? Does it break down? You know, because there's part of me that says, okay, well, things seem to be back to normal, but I'm always worried that the other shoe drops that we don't know about yet. I do worry about that.
I personally don't think there's another shoe. I think we rebounded from the spill incredibly quickly. Locally, we ended up with a lot more fish. It was a massive reset for the Gulf of Mexico.
Yep.
And this upsets people when I say it, but the fact is our fish numbers here, our biomass, all creatures, you know, from shrimp to all the minnows, the big fish, whatever, we had 3 times more life in the water for the first 3 or 4 years after the spill than we did before the spill.
Yeah, because
for the first time ever, the Gulf was shut to fishing for 3 months.
Yeah, and all kind of fishing, not just recreational, commercial.
Right,
I mean, there
right.
weren't nets, there weren't hooks, there, you know, all those
right
things were going.
Right, spawning season. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I think we should do that every 5 years.
Well, you know, and the thing is, I am so torn on that one because I do know what you're saying. I experience it firsthand. I do know what you're saying. I don't know if I could take not being able to. Maybe we could close one side of the bay,
and
leave the other side open, and then rotate.
No, I don't want to close everything down. Don't get me wrong, but. I mean, I think we've seen it with red snapper. We've had these draconian regulations, and my gosh, there are a lot of red snapper now.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it worked. We've got tons of snapper. If we ever get to catch them is another question, but they're out there now.
Yeah, don't get me started on that one. That's a whole other brand. Remind folks, too, that if we hadn't talked about this in a while, if they want to check out things like Barrier Islands or the Great Mobile Tensaw River Delta, they can get a trip booked with you and go see it themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been doing more and more trips. And it's really been great. You know, I get a lot of people on the boat who have never been out in the Delta or never been to the Barrier Islands. And there's something about getting in a small boat and leaving the dock, and you're on an adventure. You know, it's something, who knows what's going to happen.
Well, if they want to, but you're going to show them the things, well, they need to see it in its entirety, but things maybe they've heard about over time, whether they be champion trees or Indian mounds or great stretches of beach with terns nesting on them, they can go see that.
Right, and right now the lotus are blooming. I mean, anything you've read that I've written about in the last 20 years in the Press Register, those are all on the menu when we leave the dock. You know, we could go see any of that stuff. And so right now I'm doing trips in the lower Delta where we see a lot of alligators, a lot of flowers, a lot of birds. And, of course, this month the big show are the lotus, which are just kind of getting to their end. But, you know, wow, spectacular. You know, this we're sitting on the edge of this incredible wild place, and most people have never seen it except out of their car window.
So if they want to,
if
they want to see it firsthand, how do they get in touch with you?
They can email me. They can go on Facebook. I'm easy to find on there, and send me a message through Messenger. And then I do announce, you know, like I think this coming Sunday I'm going to do a trip, and I think I've already got 2 people, and so I need 4 more people who want to go. And we're going to do the lower Delta probably, and it'll probably be the last of the lotus trips. But gosh, it's spectacular out there right now. And I've been going up in this creek, and you've been there probably, McBoy Lake. This is a big, long river section, and it is totally overgrown right now with an Amazonian plant, a tiny little plant, Salvinia. The entire water surface for miles is covered in this green carpet. It's just crazy looking. And then you see these alligators pop up in it. Really neat. You'll actually see the big lubber grasshoppers walking across it.
That's pretty thick. When a lubber can gain purchase on the surface without sinking, you could probably take people to see lubbers who have never seen a grasshopper that big. They'll be frightened by seeing the size of the grasshoppers.
People literally are frightened. There's so many out there right now on the creeks around Little Batty, and people are actually scared of them. They crawl on the boat. You know, the boat brushes up against something, and suddenly there's six lubbers on the boat. You know, I've had grown men jump up and yell and run away from them.
Now you put one in somebody's shirt, and you get you get a great reaction as well.
Absolutely.
So that's awesome. We'll just remind folks about that, because I think you do great service there. People get to take those trips. And remind folks, too, if they want to read this story or any of your other stories, just AL.com, or would you go to Twitter? How would you do it?
I try and post all my stories on Facebook. And then, you know, if you go to the website or type in my name, you know, Ben Raines, my stories will pop up. And then if you click on my name at the top, you get a list of all my stories. So you can go back and scroll through them. And it's the same with all the reporters. It's like that. I just would encourage people to get out there, whether it's with me or somebody else or just themselves. You know, go walk on the beach. Go walk in the woods. We're in an amazing place at an amazing time right now. Summer is hot, but gosh, it's beautiful. There's so much life going on all around us here.
That's right. You can either sweat, you know, you can sweat on concrete or sweat in the woods or on the water. I'd rather sweat in the woods than water. That's for sure. Ben, as always, we appreciate your time. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Sean.
All right. Coming right back. More of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right. 152 FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile. A big thanks to Ben Raines. Yeah, you know, texters saying he needs to be on more often. I know, I'm always trying to track him down. We talk a bit off the air, but getting him on the show is always, always fun. Ben and a couple other people have been texting in, too, about that story that started it off that he put up on AL.com about the volleyball field and moving the eggs and all that. Ben says, no pun intended, but this burns me up. A lot of people have no situational awareness these days. They're going to do what they want when they want, no matter who or what it hurts. Well said, Ben. That's why we need to watch that. You know, there's always a group that spoils the bunch, right? And you'll have limited access to places. You'll have more rules come in. Obviously, rules were broken, federal law, with destroying and disturbing the nest in the first place. But people not knowing any better, maybe we just need to police ourselves and do what we can to let others know that, you know, leave people be, or leave critters be. Yeah, but would that not work in so many things, whether it's the horrible bloodbath in Chicago, or it's, you know, taking out a whole colony of nesting birds? I mean, it's just not... Use some common sense. Speaking of which, I saw, and I don't have the cut, and I have the cut by tomorrow morning, discussion there. Somebody says, well, this is over what we, it's like over tolerable limits, or this is beyond what we planned for with shootings in Chicago. It's sad when you get to that point, right? That, well, you know, if it was 20, it'd be okay. If 20 people were shot, that'd be fine. But 40 people, that is just, that's just too much. That's, give me a break. Give me a break. How about you decide that the line should be zero, and you start working from there on how to get... Yeah, you know, I'm not unrealistic. I realize, you know, things are going to happen, but you ought to work towards zero instead of saying, well, acceptable is this number of shootings in Chicago or wherever, Mobile, and so we're going to work to the... No, the acceptable should be zero. That should be what you work towards. No, I am not a Pollyanna. I don't think you... maybe even achieve that ever. But if you're working towards zero, I think that's probably the better option than saying, well, this is the okay amount of people shooting each other. Well, I mean, what the heck? What the heck does that, what does that sound like in certain neighborhoods of Chicago? If 48 people are hit, you know, and I hate to look at the stats on Oh, now they're saying 66 shot of the... Look at that. 66. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry about the whole story. But yeah, this one's saying 66 people were shot from 6 p.m. on Friday to midnight on Sunday. 12 of those victims have died there in Chicago. I mean, this just... Imagine, okay, 66 people were hit by a bullet. How many shots were taken? How many times was a trigger pulled for 66 people to be hit? What does that sound like in those neighborhoods? It seems like it would be enough for the majority of folks and human beings that are decent to get together to provide themselves some security and maybe let law enforcement provide them some security and point the finger. You know, I know the attitude is, no snitches. I'm sorry. I do not live in a tough neighborhood in Chicago, but I got to imagine, you know, human beings at a certain point have had enough. And you know what? In that case, snitch. If you know who's doing it, point the fingers, make sure you have the PD on your side, and go get them. At a certain point, if everybody tells and it's not snitching, if the whole community says, it's this bunch of idiots, it's these thugs that are doing it, and point the finger, and whether that be Chicago or here or anywhere, and say, you know, it's, of course it's unacceptable. And they need to not be okay with any of it. And once again, for whether it was Mayor Emanuel or somebody else saying, you know, this is over what we normally, this is our acceptable numbers. No, zero. Maybe it was Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson who said it, but it's zero is what should be the goal. Not, oh, well, you know, it's more than normal. I mean, what a sliding scale of what's okay. All right, 156, FM Talk 106.5. Why'd somebody email me or text me about Feinstein? Her record on Second Amendment issues. Yeah, well, she's in my comedy reel on her inability to identify an automatic weapon. Buddy also, oh yeah, this is true, Buddy. This is, okay, on the text line showing people who can't put the grocery carts back in the grocery cart corral. Right, those... Don't get me started. Maybe some of those people who will not be able to put the grocery cart back in the corral, just shove it off into the parking lot somewhere. There's some same people that say, hey, look, there's some bird nest. We ought to just go pick them up and then get on with playing volleyball. Maybe that's the okay thing for them to do. All right, Feinbaum on the way next. And Dalton, as I've checked here, I think we're still good. Even though we have some clips of Alex Jones in the mix, we're still good. For podcasts of this show, The Morning Show, all the great live local shows we do here at FM Talk 106.5, up on several places for podcast: iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Plus, you can just go to our website, FM Talk 106.5, click the link for podcast, and they're on the page right there. So you can get, at least for right now, we have not been edited. So that we got that going for us. All right, Feinbaum on the way next. And coming up tomorrow morning, Mobile Morning, starting at 6. Hopefully you're here for that. It will get you the latest news, weather, and traffic. All right, check in with Dr. Bill coming up in a second. By the way, I do want to check this one more time. As I said, I'd check the heat index before we wrapped up for the day, because we hit 100 with the heat index at the beginning of the show, and we've now achieved... How is that? We've come down. It only feels like 98 now. All right, cool wave is here, so I'll get out of here, go outside, and enjoy it. I'll see y'all tomorrow, bright and early, for Mobile Mornings.